Quiet, please.
You're listening to Birdies and Bogeys, hosted by Jordan Bloxham and Weston Mon, bringing you golf's week in review, recapping your favorite tournaments with professional insight from their perspective. Now, quiet, please. Here's your hosts, Jordan and Weston.
Weston, what's up?
Oh, it's happening.
It is happening. It is still happening. We still have snow on the ground, man. What's going on? I'm not liking this very much, and there's supposed to be more snow tonight. Brr. Like, it really needs to stop.
That would be a dream come true.
For that, I'm going to have to go down to St. George, and this time actually take golf clubs, because yeah. My latest trip this weekend was family time and no golf clubs. Plus, it was supposed to be crappy weather, which definitely played into that part of it. But
yeah, you did not want to deal with that for sure.
No, plus time, all that. Went down to the parade of homes down there to look at some houses that I can't afford at the moment. But it was fun. It's always fun to go look at stuff like that.
Yeah, they do some pretty amazing stuff down there. That region is, like, first of all, it's like a hidden gem for golf trips. Like,
yeah,
listeners out there, and you're looking for a unique location to hit up 10 amazing golf courses over 7 days, this is one of those places for sure.
Yeah, there's a lot, and they've got some new courses down there. Like I said, I haven't played the redesigned Entrada course down there that McKay Kid, David Kid did.
Yeah.
And Black Desert, which is Weisskopf design.
Weisskopf, yeah.
Which is supposed to be pretty good.
I've heard great things about it. And it's in a great position but tucked in between a nice little red rocked high wall canyon kind of a scenario over there, just outside of St. George. And
yeah, over by, it's very, very close to Entrada. So
yeah,
very similar
neighbors.
Yeah. Features there. And, heard good things. I have played it on TrackMan, because they had it on TrackMan early.
Oh, did they?
Yeah. So they've had it on TrackMan for a while. The design of it, they have changed some things from the TrackMan design. So they did some little modifications to the actual course. So possibly going down with the college team, my college team here in about a week. I know I'm going to get them on to play it for sure. I'll be able to make the trip with them. Not sure yet, but I'll definitely get down there and play it sooner than later for sure.
That's cool.
But yeah, let's get into it. It's kind of a resurgence of sorts with guys that haven't won for a while on the two tours that we're going to talk about.
One heck of a comeback for the PGA Tour. That's a long stint.
That is a long stint. Chris Kirk wins for the first time in 8 years, which I didn't realize, right? Because he's been around. He's a pretty recognizable, at least in, to me, he's a very recognizable player that's been around for a while. And I was thinking this, that maybe he's just got the fakest beard looking beard that I've, one of the fakest looking beards I've ever seen. So that's why I remember it, but it sounds like he was going through some stuff for a while, which probably led to some of that drop off. But comes back leading. I didn't get to watch much of it because I was driving home from St. George on Sunday. But watched a little bit of the replay today. I did see Chris Kirk. They both, him and Cole, dumped it in the water at least once during the final round. Yeah. But Chris Kirk had a one-shot lead going into the final hole, a par five, and hit his second shot into the water. Just short, pushed it a little bit, hits off the rocks, bounces back in the water. It's a good shot. Out makes par to win after Eric Cole could not get up and down from just left of the green in two. But yeah, so he makes a bogey and then birdies the first playoff hole, about jars it. And then Eric Cole's birdie putt takes a hard lip, to give Chris Kirk the win. But I mean, Chris Kirk's, I mean, obviously Journey won 8 years ago. I think they said 176 or something starts, I believe. But his journey, and then I just saw a thing that the Corn Fairy posted about Eric Cole's journey. So I want to find it because he was kind of like, I can't remember the tour's name right off the top of my head, but I am going to find it because it's deserves to be found. But this guy there it is. So the Minor League Golf Tour is what they called it. The dude has 56 wins on the Minor League Golf Tour, which that's is just crazy, right? In 2019, he won 14 times on that tour.
That's a handful.
That's a lot. And then he got back on the Corn Ferry, and then, you know, progressively got to where he earned his tour card this year. But yeah, it's kind of a crazy, like, I saw that and I'm like, that's bonkers. So the guy kind of knows how to win. I wouldn't say that it's like completely knows how to win, because he didn't finish it off. But that's still a crazy amount of wins, right? Anywhere that you look. Oh,
totally.
So that's kind of cool there. And a story that's really cool as well is Ryan Gerard, who was the last player in for the Monday qualifier, won a playoff to make it into the event, and then proceeded to shoot 69, 63, 71, 67 to take a solo fourth place finish and make $411,000 and get an exemption into next week's tournament, but not the Arnold Palmer. He gets an exemption into the Puerto Rico, which is the opposite field event, which, right, he's probably elated because he just needs a few more points. If he plays good, he's got his scorecard for the rest of the year, based on the points that he would earn for that. But I'm like, how do they determine that? Is it because of it's an invitational? I mean, or they're just like, well, you're not a member of the tour, so we can't give you a slot in an elevated event. So you get the opposite field event. I don't think he's complaining. I mean, to be honest with you. So
yeah, I mean, it was either that or go Monday qualify down in Mayakoba. or Puerto Rico, I mean.
Puerto Rico, yeah.
Yeah. So it's
My
just like.
yeah, no, like I said, I don't think he's upset about going and getting a guaranteed start on tour.
Yeah.
Right? Because he's I think he's a Korn Ferry member, so he does have that there, but he would much rather another top five in Puerto Rico, and then he's got his tour card for the rest of the year because he'll, my guess is he would earn enough points there to then qualify for membership.
Yep.
But this year, the Honda Classic, it is the last year of Honda's sponsorship of it. And we were talking a little bit about that before, and a lot of that has to do with it gets smushed right in between five or four other elevate, right? Now they call them, what do they call them? Elevated events. I think
Marquee.
marquee, but they actually give them, they gave them a name this year. And I think it's elevated events, right? So the Phoenix Open, the WM Phoenix Open was an elevated event. The Genesis is an elevated event. Honda
Yeah.
Classic is not. And then you go into the Arnold Palmer Invitation, which is an elevated event. And then the Players Championship, which is obviously an elevated event.
Yeah.
So it gets smushed in between four really big tournaments. And I was hearing them talk that they're going to try to like move the elevated status around so that all these tournaments get it at some point. But I'm like, what are you going to do? Are you going to really take away the elevated status from any of those other four tournaments to give it to the Honda? So my guess is you're going to get a another sponsor, but not as big as Honda. It'll come in and
Yeah, I don't.
give it its title sponsorship, and then they'll have a whole bunch of other smaller ones, and they'll make it happen. It'll just be continue to be a tournament like it is now, right? Where you don't have, and there wasn't one single player in the top 25 of the world rankings, if I'm not mistaken. Maybe it was just top 20 in the world rankings, but yeah, there wasn't a top 20 player in the world rankings that played in this tournament.
No, it was pretty weak. I heard a joke and I can't remember what it was saying, but like, oh, there's a member guest tournament at Seminole,
Yes.
and that field at
Is
the member
stronger.
guest is stronger than both the Liv Myakova and the recent Honda. So it's like, holy cow, what's going on over there?
That was actually played today. The
Oh,
Seminole Pro
member.
member. Yeah, it's a Seminole Pro member. See this one, go see. But this is, I will say this though, that sounds like they did not let any live players, they didn't let any live members, were not welcome.
Oh, cool. Ooh. That's
To play
awesome.
in this one, which I don't know. It is what it is, but you know, then you're taking away some of the best players in the world. But they have the right to do that. You know what I'm saying?
Yep. Yeah.
They're Seminole, and said I don't think it's like hurts anyone, but still kind of stupid that they don't. But yeah, that was played today, and I'm not signing into amateurgolf.com to look at their leaderboard. So somebody else who has that membership can, or that, I mean, it's probably free, but I'm not going to sign into it because I don't need to know that bad. But like 12 of the top 20, which is way more than the Honda had, were playing there. And some of those that were in the top, well, I think Cam Smith's the only one that's in the top 20 at the moment for Liv. So
yeah.
But yeah, speaking of Liv, they had their first event, Mayakoba. And another player who hasn't won for a quick minute. Charles Howell III.
Yeah.
Gets the win running away. I mean, he lapped the field in the final round, shooting a tidy little 8-under. Yeah. Went by 4 shots over Peter Uihlein and 6 shots over Brandon Grace. But I think the like bigger thing of that is, I mean, he went on a heater early for sure.
Yeah.
Shoots a tidy little 6-under on the front nine, and then the finishes with the bogey free 8-under, which, I mean, they have PGA Tour tournaments here. And there's a few holes that can get you if you don't pay attention, right? Saw it all week that there was players in and around the mangroves in some bad spots. So
yeah, it's, you know, there's, I wouldn't say any particular course that's going to be a tour caliber competition. It's no walk in the park. And so, yeah, just say it really did some guys in.
Arguably the best player on the Live Tour, Dustin Johnson.
Yep.
Got absolutely roasted. And it wasn't like he had big numbers either. I don't think he had one single birdie. Maybe he had one. But he shoots 7 over, I think, with 8 bogeys and 1 birdie.
Wow.
Which, so he was just like death by 1,000 cuts.
Oh, totally.
It has to be, and it is, it's the worst feeling, right? To be like, oh, I just shot 8 over, 9 over, and I had no doubles on the card.
Yeah.
It was just like, I was just off that much where it's crazy. But yeah, so Charles Howell gets his first win since the 2018-2019. I just had it up. It was 2018-2019 RSM Classic. So that was earlier on in the year, so a Hilton Head. Yeah. But before that, it was 2007 and then 2002. So he has 3 PGA Tour wins, and he was on tour for a while. I didn't realize he was as old as he is. Man, he's an old cat. 43. But getting it done. But I believe he was part of the Team Crusher too, which just, yeah, absolutely obliterated the field on the team side of it.
And they did really well.
Yeah, they won by 9 shots. Corey says was no was next, and then Torque GC was after that. Like I said, I will say this, they could work. I mean, they're really trying to push the team thing for LIV Golf. They need to figure out better names, better logos, because some of them are atrocious. I will say
Yeah.
that.
No, there's a lot to be adjusted and fixed, and I think these are just some generic names to get things going, but maybe pretty soon it's the team Chevron or team,
Yeah, I think they're just going to be sponsored like the NBA, right? They'll have, right, like the Utah Jazz. They have the Five for the Fight, which is a uniform sponsor. So they'll have some stuff like that. But it's the players that are picking the names, the captains, right? So Bubba Watson, when he finally got official control of his team this year, he changed his name to the Range Goats. I will say their team logo may be one of the best, because it's a goat. So it's, I mean, it's, that one's pretty good. And they did change, like Smash GC, I think, changed up their logo a little bit. Iron's Heads is staying this stayed the same. Four Aces Torque changed theirs up a little bit. Then you had Cam Smith's team changed to the Ripper GC, and its logo is not right, it's just a couple of arrows, basically ish symbol. So it's not like terrible, but it is what it is on that side of it. And we'll see what happens with the team portion of it. They're definitely pushing that a little bit harder, and I think what's going to end up happening there, and we've talked about this, is you are going to get, some sponsorships for teams, right? We discussed this a little bit last week, where they have their first like major sponsor of the thing, right? It's not just Liv, and then it's not, right? It was how what? Something pro.
Easy post.
Easy post. Easy post. Easy post, not pro. So who knows? I think originally they wanted like team owners to come in and to turn it more of like that, and have, my guess is it's, rather than it being more of a like NBA model, it will be more of a F1 model, right? Where you have the teams, but the each team has the individuals, right, that are doing that. So it's going to be more of, I think it'll be more of that type of a format, or not format, but structure to it. But we'll see. Like I said, people were dogging it because it didn't have enough, there wasn't enough fans. So I'm like, you watched the Mayakoba when the PGA was there, right? It's not a place that's conducive to bringing a whole ton of fans out
No.
anyway. So yeah, so that it doesn't bother me much. I'm debating whether to talk about this next topic. Rory's in another squabble,
Surprise.
but it's not anything he necessarily did. It was Mr. Sergio Garcia brought him up in an article about him being immature, which, pot kettle. I think they just need to get off of it and just say, hey, I respect them for the decision they made. They should understand where I'm coming from. But he did that. But I think the biggest thing from that, interview that he gave to the Telegraph was that LIV Golf is listening to the players, even if they don't implement it, they're like genuinely listening to ideas. And the PGA Tour, unless you're one of two, maybe three guys, and he mentioned Rory and Tiger Woods by name, that if you're not one of those two guys and a possible third, you're basically told to sit down and shut up. Which I kind of believe. I think
Oh yeah.
we've discussed a little bit about it on this podcast about the pull that a select few guys have, and whether that's because they were chosen by the tour and they're getting compensated accordingly, is a different story. But that was the biggest thing there. And like I said, we'll see how it all plays out. I think LIV just needs to work their butt off on making their product the best product that they can make it, right?
Yeah,
So that they can get viability.
I think in general, like, kind of tired of the competition aspect of it. Like, the further that LIV develops, if they really wanted to compete with the PGA Tour, they would have made stroke play events that brought in the top players from the Asian Tour and competed like on over 4 days. Like, if they really wanted to do that, that's what they would have done. And so ultimately, I see these events, tour versus league, whatever. I don't even see them as a competing product. Like, they're just not even the same. You got a 48 field with four team events, and it's a team, an individual, and it's nothing like a singular stroke play event with a cut. And so it's like they should just lay off. Like, I honestly don't know why the PGA Tour is making such a big deal about it.
Yeah,
It's
at this point, yeah. Why? But I think they had to. It's I don't
yeah.
it's interesting because I thought my initial thought was that they were going to eventually move to that. But it sounds like they're adopting more of the team aspect of it. But I don't know whether that necessarily will cater towards you getting some better players. But it might, right? They may perfect this, and other players are like, wait a second, I can go over there. I can still play individually, but still, be a part of a team, be a part of whatever, and it may appeal to some guys, and maybe not. It might not. Golf has long been an individual sport, no matter what, right? You're even when you play on a college team, a high school team, it's like it's fun, but you're still playing pretty much. You're playing as an individual, but
Yeah.
so there's a lot of selfishness in golf at times, right?
Totally.
So whether that'll translate, who knows? Maybe they'll work out the kinks in the next this year and the next year. I don't think people are like, oh, they're done after this year. And I'm like, no.
Yeah,
The
they're sticking around.
they're sticking around. The fund has plenty of money. Obviously, they don't want to just keep throwing money at it. It has to show some progression. But if you look at it as a business, businesses, you take 3 to 5 years to become profitable. So if they're looking at it as a business, they're looking at these first couple of years as developmental years. So everybody's like, oh, it's just going to be gone. I'm like, no, they've got plenty of money to float this for 3 to 5 years to see if to prove the concept.
Yeah.
So it's, yeah. I'm excited. Like I said, I'll watch golf. It's on. People are like, oh, I'm not going to watch it. And I'm like, okay, then don't watch it. Watch the PGA Tour. I'll watch both.
Right? Yeah, I watched both and it was great. It's mm-hmm. okay. It's just more golf content.
Yes. The one thing that I did, and I was like, oh, I thought it was more silly than anything, was the SI golf rankings. But okay. We did a little bit of looking at it before we started today, and for one, it includes all tours, right? No, no qualifications, right? They're not making you jump through all these hurdles to be part of the ranking. So all golf tours, and they've tweaked some things, but they're basically, when you look at it, right, the official golf world ranking has Dustin Johnson at like 56. I'm like, dude is not, or 54.
No.
Dude is not the 54th best player in the world.
Not even close.
And the SI ranking, with how they've done it, they have him at like 15, which he hasn't played a ton. And the reason that I think he's been hurt so bad, because I was looking at it and I'm like, wait a second. Like, Patrick Reed hasn't fallen off as much. Kevin Na hasn't fallen off as much. Or, you know, some of these other players. But I'm like, Dustin Johnson has exclusively played LIV golf tournaments.
Yeah.
Right. He was one of the guys that's like, hey, I'm doing this because it gives me, I have to play golf for 14 weeks and then I get the rest of the time to chill. Right. And he's kind of taken that to heart, right? He's obviously going to play in the majors and all that. So it'll be interesting. Right? They change a few things with the way they structure it. They don't use strokes gained. They use DPS, or distance per shot. So basically they're taking the number of shots, or the total distance divided by number of shots, and there's a whole thing. It'll be interesting to see how it functions, but I'm kind of glad that somebody came out and was like, the world golf ranking sucks, so we're going to do something that we feel is a better product that includes all players, no matter where they're playing, right? And they're obviously not going to get because the strength of field's not going to be there.
Yeah.
So they're not going to get the amount of points, but they're at least getting some points to stay relevant. So we'll see where that kind of leads, where that leads in the future.
Well, I'm glad it's not just some random organization that started to do it, you know, as a, you know, an attack at the World Golf Rankings. Like, it's a legitimate sports publication. And to have that actually be the you know, driving entity around it, like, it's cool because they're all about sports. It's not just the world golf ranking. They're about football, they're about everything. And so for them to develop their own algorithm and measurement, I think is pretty awesome.
Yeah, like I said, they've definitely put some thought into it. My guess is they've been working on this for a bit. And one of the features that they're using right there, it's a system called Golf Intelligence, but they're actually doing it where you can, like, they're putting it in where how players perform when they tee off in the morning, when they tee off in the afternoon, how they play when it's windy, how they play when it's rainy, how they play when it's a strong field versus a weak field, how they're playing. Like there was a couple of different things, but it's like, you know, when it's in pressure situations, I think it was, when they're in contention. So it's like that stuff that I think tells you more about a player than just simple metrics. So that'll be kind of fun to watch. And obviously there's some things that come out that you'd figure out about a player. If they're winning, obviously they're playing good, winning in contention, but it'd be fun to see who doesn't perform well. So I'm excited. Like I said, LIV Golf has definitely brought about some changes that need to be made, and they're being made. Whether this SI World Rankings takes hold, I don't know, because again, you have the board of the OWGR that members that sit on that board are part of the major tours. So they're obviously not going to relinquish that very easily.
No, but you know, think about college football. There's the coaches poll and then the AP poll. And like both of those have weight, and depending on how you look at them. And so there are other factors that go into rankings in other sports. And so for there not to be a competing ranking factor algorithm out there, of course, that's a huge opportunity. And how cool is it for, you know, Sports Illustrated to actually do it? So the big thing will be, you know, how does it work out throughout this year? Because I don't think anybody's going to do anything with it for the first year. But year two, after they vetted it, you may see it become a factor in how the USGA decides. Because they don't, maybe there's, you know, a relationship there. Maybe that's going to change. And the USGA decides we're going to use the Sports Illustrated ranking factor. And that could just change the entire ball game.
Oh, yep. I mean, totally could, right? Or you come out, they start using that, or they use a combination of the two. Like, that's basically what the college football playoff did, right? They're not basing it solely off one, you know, they're not basing it off the coaches. They're not basing it off the AP, right? They're using a combination of a couple of things to make that their determination of who needs to be there. So,
yeah,
but I'll let you take away this next section, because you did a little research on Bryson DeChambeau and his new irons.
Yeah. Well, I mean, as the story goes, you know, Bryson is no longer in a contract with Cobra Golf, who really was a longtime partner of him. So,
yeah, but I don't think they still haven't officially come out and cut ties. Or did they?
I think it was official. I mean, I know there was an article about the Cobra rep, actually, stating he was just way out of line in what his demands were for equipment and their capabilities. But he's found his way over to Ping, and Ping had to basically not necessarily reinvent, but they had to do a lot of tinkering to figure out what it was they needed to do to make Bryson a set of irons. And so when it comes to a single length set of irons, it's really interesting. All of them have, you know, all these irons have the same lie angle, and all these irons have the same length. So you would assume they might have the same swing weight, but that's not the case, because irons at different sections of the set have different CGs. And so even though lie angle and length are the same, and head weight as well, you'll actually see fluctuations in swing weight because the CG might be higher in the pitching wedge to have a more driven flight. and it would be lower in the four iron. And those locations actually alter how swing weight works. So it was pretty interesting to see how they really went to town to try and crack the code for Bryson. Now, inserting my personal opinion, it's ridiculous the lofts that he's putting on these irons. But when you have a four iron that's the same length as an eight iron or seven iron, you do need it to go farther. But I don't think it requires the lofting that he has placed on these.
I just like I was looking at it and I glanced at it because I knew that we'd dig into it a little bit, or you would dig into it. And I just looked up and then I'm like, wait a second. If there's a reason he hits, I mean, he swings hard,
Yeah.
but when you have a seven iron that is the length of a six iron and it's 25 degrees, it's going to be a rocket ship.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. So let me run you through these lofts. This may surprise you. So the pitching wedge is 40 degrees, which in any set that I'm used to playing, 40 degrees is typically an eight iron. That's the set that I play. But you'll find that as the nine iron in most other maybe game improvement sets. You'll have like a 44 degree pitching wedge and a 39 degree nine iron. So very strong loss, but to have your pitching wedge at
The 40,
40, it's like,
that's very strong.
and not to mention it's the length of an eight iron. So technically your pitching wedge is an eight iron, in my point of view, right? So for me, that's a club that's gonna at sea level go 155. And so that to me doesn't seem realistic, but for Bryson, who's swinging significantly faster, it's probably like his 170 club. That's like what does that actually do for him in his game? But anyways, pitching wedge is 40, 9 iron 35, 8 iron 30, 7 iron 25, 6 iron 21.5, 5 iron 19.5, and 4 iron 16. So I mean, consider that.
Yeah, those are some weird gapping too at the upper end of that set, right? Where he basically has five in this, and it usually happens, right? You're gonna go, four or five until you get to that six end, and then you'll get a little tighter gaps when you go up, but he goes three and a half between the six and seven. And then only two between the four and five, but then he goes the three and a half between the four and five. So
Yeah.
it's a weird kind of setup.
It's weird because you're typically going to have most golfers, the faster you swing, the larger the margin. And I swing semi-fast. I'm swinging a 7 iron around 100 miles per hour club head speed. So I typically have about a 13-yard gap between my irons. And as you swing slower, it might drop to 12, 11, maybe 10. And so that's very normal. I don't know what his gaps are here, but he now has to curate his set to hit certain numbers. So, it's not that he's looking for a consistent 15-yard gap, or maybe he is, but I would feel like those lofts would need to be significantly different to achieve that, especially in the high end, the four, five, and six. I'm guessing the four iron's like, here's my number. I need it to do this. I want my 5 iron to do this. Regardless of the gap. So
Exactly. I'm still interested to see what his wedges are at and
yeah, the article didn't
wedges
even
they
go
play.
into that, but he's got ping wedges, and I think from the what's in the bag pictures that I've seen, he's got like I know he's got a 50 degree in there, so he's probably got a 45, a 50, and then
Like a
a 5 and a
58.
60. Yeah.
But they're all still the same. They're the six iron length. And until he figures out that he needs to go shorter in those so that he can have more control of it, he'll still struggle a little bit because his like wedge game is inconsistent at best.
Yeah,
I mean, considering whatever what other top level tour
yeah.
players is at, it's just it's not great in that sense. But yeah, that's kind of mind-boggling where he
There's
goes with
some
it.
interesting aspects, and I would dare say that a shorter wedge with a heavier head provides more short game value than an 8 iron length wedge with a head that weighs as much as an 8 iron, because there's just more mass. And if you're trying to get something to get out of the rough and have some inertia and momentum, that heavier club head, I think, provides more value than an 8 iron. But that's just kind of how my brain sees it, though.
Yeah, one, it's one of the main contributing factors, I think, to when he won the US Open, is because the rough was thick and heavy and he was just pounding it down there. But the greens allowed for a ball that he could chop to the
Yeah.
front and it would run through it. Run out. So
Yeah.
the approaches to the greens had were very friendly to that. So he didn't have to fly it on the green. He could throw it up there, right? And then even if they didn't, he had a fairly simple chip from that point. So
Yeah.
well, still needs to get better at that if he wants to contend at some of these places, because he'll never contend at his par 68 Augusta National, how he
Well,
performs with his wedges.
that's the funny thing is, like, Augusta is such a unique beast in the sense that you have to have just an A plus short game.
Yeah.
You have to. And then there's no, like, very rarely is there a full swing into a hole. Like, you have to hit certain shots that don't spin. Like,
Yeah.
it's just such a demanding course, and there's nothing stock about it. And I feel like the one length set is very much a stock thing.
For sure. Oh, well, let's go into the what's in the bag of the two winners that we spoke of earlier. So,
Yeah.
Chris Kirk. I'll let you go through it. See if you see anything. Like I said, it. He's more of a Callaway guy, but he does throw in some tailor-made fairway woods.
Yeah, I'd say this is pretty much a stock bag. I'd say the only thing that kind of pops out, and maybe this is something that other people could get advantage of, and it's something I've taken advantage of. Simply put, like, graphite shafts have gotten better. Now, I've been doing this for a long time, so I was younger and stronger, but also graphite shafts weren't as good as they are today. So I used to, swing an 80 gram driver shaft, maybe even more, 85 gram driver shaft. And that was considered very normal, some 20 years ago.
Right.
But nowadays, you're seeing more and more guys play the six range or 60 gram range in their driver shafts. And this is what he's done. He's got a 6TX, in Aventus Blue. They make that 6TX is incredibly stout. I have it, the Ventus Black 6TX in my driver.
Yeah.
And I'm a big dude, 6'3", 250, gonna probably average anywhere from 170 to 175 club head speed or ball speed. So it's like, it's got plenty of stiffness, rigidity that even, the tour players are going to demand on it. So I don't see any need for a golfer to drop back into the 80 range, maybe even
No.
70 range, unless you're just like totally torquing the shaft in a way that a six wouldn't
Yes.
do it. But
If you load it really hard at the top, if your transition's really hard, there's times when I'm fitting players where Right. They might not necessarily need even an extra stiff, but because they load it the way they do, they need something that is able to handle that transition.
Yeah. But like, even then though,
Yes.
is
No,
that
it's.
like, is that a good swing? Or is that something they could probably change that and have more.
Okay, but I will ask you this question. How much time is it going to take to change that move over just getting a shaft that works better for their swing?
Yeah.
Right?
Well,
Because a swing change like that, because 90% of golfers are not going to spend the time to change. And I say this as an instructor, and there's the ways to do it, but something like that to change a transition that's inherent, right? You can make little tweaks otherwise, but that one is usually something that would take a lot of time.
yeah.
And most players are not willing to put in that time to make that change.
Yeah.
So what's an easier option? Let's get you something that's a little heavier that can handle that transition, so that then we can help you play better golf that way.
Yeah.
It's
Yeah.
all about time. You're like, well, no, is it a swing thing? Well, sometimes yes, but
Yeah.
there's inherent habits that a lot of players have that are harder to get rid of without spending hours and hours, and they don't want to spend hours and hours to do it.
No, not at all. And so, yeah, he transitions from a 60 gram range driver shaft right into an 80 gram range in the 3-wood, which is quite acceptable.
Yep.
I actually transitioned to a 70 gram in the 3-wood now, but yeah, he keeps it consistent in the 3-wood. He's got the Ventus Blue 8TX in the 3 and the 5-wood. So
Yeah, like I said, there's the 5 wood, right? High lofted.
yeah,
High lofted wood, fairway wood again.
he's clearly a high spin player. Like I haven't the Project XLZ are like notorious low spinning shafts. So
I don't like them as a shaft personally.
what's your qualms?
I hate the way they load,
Yeah.
right? And they might be, but Project X in general hasn't been a very consistent shaft either.
Yeah.
And
Well,
in my
I would say feedback
experience.
across multiple club builders and advanced players, they saw the quality of Project X drop as it came under the wing of True Temper.
So, and like I said, and I have put like way back, I played Project X, but yeah, like I've seen some things, and there's a small select guys who do still play the Project X. Obviously, that they don't necessarily always play the Project XLZ. It's just usually the Project X.
Yeah.
But when they're getting them built, they're getting. Right, they're finding the shafts that are consistent.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of the times when, in my experience with Project X, they came in very inconsistent or very stiff
Yeah.
for their
No, it's I would
flex
say
and weight.
I would agree. I've seen club builders, oh, you want Project X or you want even the tour issue dynamic gold. Okay, we need to order 2 or 3 sets of those, and then we'll weight sort them to find out which ones work best. Very common.
So yeah, like say nothing great, and then Charles Howe the third, CH3. We had to do a little bit more digging for
Yeah.
his, so there's not a ton. He does have the new G430.
Oh, wait, before we jump in, we do need to pay respect to the greatest wedge in current
winning
history.
I saw this on Pokey Where It Drops.
This Callaway staffer does play Vokey wedges in the 56 and the 60, and you guessed it, the 60 degree is a tee grind.
Yes, but he also plays a 56 degree, SM9. So,
yep,
he's there. So I don't. He must have a very limited Callaway contract, right? Because he's got the driver.
Well,
and he's got the irons and he's got one wedge, right?
He's probably got a hat and bag deal and like 10 clubs.
Yeah. I don't know. Is there even 10 clubs in there?
Yeah. So four. So he's got his four iron.
Oh, I guess he
five,
does.
Six, seven, eight, nine. So there's six. And then he's got a putter.
Yeah. So he's got 10.
Then he's got two wedges and then a driver. So that's 10 clubs. Which is probably one of the better staff deals you can get. Like hat, bag, 10 club deal. That gives you four others you can do whatever you want with. And he's playing a Titleist Pro V1X, which is like, whoa, for a Callaway guy. So,
right. So I'm just. I don't even think he probably has. Because this his. Hat even say Callaway on it. He does have Travis Matthews, which is owned by Callaway.
Mm-hmm.
So I mean, there's something like that is my guess. And he's got some deal that way with it. So yeah, it's good. Don't lock yourself in. Like if I'm a tour player, I'm not. I'm like, I'll give you 10 clubs, right? Because I want to play my scoring clubs and a couple of others that I may want on the back. But yes, the tee grind strikes again. It's been off for a little bit, but that's because John Rahm has won just about everything this year. And he's a full bagger. With Callaway. But CH3
is
not with anyone.
And
so
very, very typical of the guys on the LIV Golf Tour. They're losing their club contracts or they're opting to not renew. Gives them the flexibility to play what they want. And in this case, Charles Howell, he's all over the map. And we were able to at least piece together some stuff by watching the round highlights, as well as looking on Getty Images. But he's got a Ping G430 driver and he's got a PXG fairway, and I think the coolest part of his bag is he's playing the new PXG 0317 blades.
Mm-hmm.
And they're a good looking club.
They do look really, really clean.
Yeah, they do. And then he's got some Ping Glide wedges. I don't know how many, but I did see him chipping with a Ping Glide 4.0. And then the most unique thing in his bag, the Lab Link 1 stock, or maybe it's not the stock, but the Link 1 putter. It's more of a center shafted, behind the face type of a setup to provide that unique Lab experience of, zero rotational force on a putter as you're putting it. So it's a little bit, well, I wouldn't say little, it's a lot cleaner than some of the other designs. And people are finding the benefit of the technology and something that looks a little more normal.
Yeah, like I said, it's way better looking than, and they've gotten a little bit better, right? They've been able to utilize their concept, right, with a little bit better package, right? You've got Adam Scott, you got I saw Sergio was with them. There's a couple of guys who play the tine looking one. That's, but it's not quite as exaggerated as their first model. So they're getting better with their look because they think, right, even though their concept has some validity, right, to it, I think there was a lot of people that were like, no thanks, I'm not even touching that.
Yeah, well, and you know, and I'm one of those guys, like, I think the science is interesting, and the more people that adopt it, then, you know, the more validity it's going to get. And we're seeing this now, obviously, with a win. You need to see more, right, to show that it's actually having an impact. Because the reality is these guys are such good athletes. You know, they could probably putt with poop on a stick and win a tournament. So if there's truly a huge advantage in how it affects technique, then it'll start to become evident through its results and through its wins.
Yes, for sure. But yeah, and we could never find out what ball he was playing, but dude was balling out, shooting 8 under. And like I said, we'll wait and see. I haven't really, I've been busy doing a lot of other stuff during on the weekend, so I haven't watched much golf at all. So I'm hoping to get to watch a little bit more coming up, right? The Arnold Palmer is always a fun one to watch.
Yeah,
Players that's is always a fun one to watch. So I'll watch those. And in true live fashion, no matter what anybody says about him, he has made an effort to not schedule over bigger tournaments, right?
Yeah.
So I guess because the 17th through the 19th is their next tournament, and that's in Tuscan or Tucson, however you want to pronounce it. Again, right. It's not overlapping because it comes, right. They let the Arnold Palmer, they let the players pan out. So it basically goes in between the players and the Masters. So if you're right, if you're looking at that, you got the players and then you got the Valspar, which is what it's competing with, which it's there, but it's not an elevated event, right? And then their next tournament after that, let's see, just one schedule. And then they go Orlando. So you have two tournaments in between there. So they're getting them done in between. And then you'll have the Masters, right? And then after the Masters, a little bit, then they'll go out to Australia and then Singapore. So they'll get some of this stuff and these tournaments done in between. So that's where I think they can coexist. And I think that's the same, like, kind of thing that John Rahm was saying. He was like, you know, we're basically going to, we can coexist at some point. We'll just have to see when that is. But I don't know. I still don't think everything is yet to play out. I think we'll still have a couple of years to really figure out whether this tour will be able to survive or not. But I think that's it. We haven't talked about anything LPGA, DP World Tour, but it's our podcast and we'll do what we want to.
No equality here. Those favorites.
Yeah, we'll find the tournaments that are there that interest us. when they start making some news that we want to pay attention to.
Yep.
But I think that's it. And that until next time, we're out.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Birdies and Bogeys. If you enjoyed what you heard, please subscribe, leave us a rating and review, and until next time, have a great week.